Welcome to Literacy Matters, Empowered Conversations, a production of Learning Without Tears. I'm your host, Dr. Cheryl Lundy Swift, with your go-to monthly podcast, where we dive into important literacy topics, get practical tips, and listen to inspiring stories from experts in the field. I am super excited to have an empowering conversation with Sarah Marie. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Hi, Dr. Cheryl. I am so excited to be connecting with you again and that I get to join you on your show today. So thank you so much for having me.
Of course. I so enjoyed being on your show. I was able to share some practical strategies to close literacy gaps. So I hope that that's doing well on your
yes.
on your podcast. it's going to be a pleasure to be now on the opposite side of the mic with you today because you have so many great things to share about all things literacy. Sarah Marie is the founder of the Stellar Teacher Company and the Stellar Literacy Collective, a membership that supports upper elementary teachers with the science of reading aligned resources. Sarah is also the host of the Stellar Teacher podcast, of which I have had the pleasure to be a guest. Sarah also shares practical literacy tips on her YouTube channel at the Stellar Teacher Company. She is passionate about helping educators simplify and strengthen their literacy instruction so they can feel confident and supported in the classroom. Let's get into it.
Thank you.
So, Sarah, I had the pleasure of going to the Reading League Summit, and I just have to give a shout out to Dr. Maria Murray, president of the Reading League. They did a phenomenal job of bringing in like all the experts about all things reading and literacy to really kind of really set the stage and make sure that everyone is kind of on the same page about how we can move the needle for our teachers and ultimately for our students. And one of the things that we were talking about is really thinking about and expanding that simple view of reading, looking at, you know, frameworks like Scarborough's Reading Rope, but also really looking at the active view of reading by Cartwright and Duke, who were both in the house, by the way, to really think about more of the rope and thinking about ways to kind of get at teaching for all students. And one thing we can't forget is the purpose of reading, right? So how do you recommend that teachers balance phonics instruction and also make sure that children can comprehend what they're reading?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm going to second that shout out to the Reading League. We love the Reading League at the Stellar Teacher Company and always try to find a way to make it to their conferences because I love their mission of really empowering educators, right? Because it's teachers have to have the literacy content knowledge if they want to be successful with their literacy practices in their classroom. So I'm so glad that you got to experience one of their conferences, summit sessions, always incredible.
Yes.
This question, right? How do we balance really phonics and comprehension is something that we talk a lot about as a team. And we talk a lot about it with our audience as well. You know, we primarily serve upper elementary teachers. And so many teachers reach out to us and they say, I'm a fourth grade teacher. I have students who cannot decode. And yet I, you know, have to support them with comprehension. I have to make sure they can understand. I've got the tests that I need to worry about. They don't really have the resources or the training on how to teach phonics. So it is this sort of, it almost feels like this balance of I'm either teaching phonics or I'm teaching comprehension. So how do we balance that? And I think, you know, one of the first things that we need to recognize is it's not an either or.
Right.
I think, you know, the five pillars of literacy instruction that we, you know, have been given to us by the National Reading Panel are great. It helps us know that we need to have, you know, phonemic awareness, phonics, vocabulary, fluency, and comprehension in order to achieve reading success. But we don't want to teach those things in isolation, right? Same thing with Scarborough's Reading Rope. You know, it gives us a very clear model of what skilled reading looks like. But what we don't want to do is think, okay, let me just work my way through that reading rope and like, let me teach background knowledge, check. Let me teach vocabulary, check. Let me teach, you know, word recognition, check. And it's really more of paying attention to your readers and realizing what it is that they need.
Yeah.
But when I think about this phonics and comprehension balance, especially in the upper elementary, you know, perspective, but the same is true in lower elementary, like I said, it doesn't need to be an either or. It's really like a both and. And so some sort of practical ways to do that is, first of all, if you have students in your class that struggle with word recognition, that gap absolutely has to be addressed.
Yes.
You cannot go on continuing to build language comprehension skills and expect students to comprehend what they read unless we teach them those phonics concepts because they have to be able to decode if we ever want them to comprehend. And so we need to make sure then that we're teaching them phonics through explicit systematic instruction. But what we can do, right? So if you're an upper elementary teacher and let's say you have a student that is struggling with the OI, OY diphthong spelling pattern, you're going to teach that to them through an explicit phonics lesson, right? You know, so you're going to be doing phonemic awareness activities, you know, segmenting activities, blending activities, having them read word phrases, sentences with that spelling pattern. And eventually they're going to get to a decodable text where they're going to be practicing decoding, you know, the words that have that spelling pattern and all of the other patterns that they've learned. But we don't need to stop our instruction with just decoding. They've just read a text.
Right.
So now we can bring in all of the language comprehension strands. We are working on an intervention program really specifically for third, fourth, and fifth grade students. And this lesson that I'm talking about specifically that is addressing the OI, OY spelling pattern, there is a decodable text that is all about a cochlear implant. And it has a lot of OI sounds because of, you know, noise and, you know, different sounds like that. So before students read the text, teachers are going to build their background knowledge about what a cochlear implant is and how it help students with hearing disabilities. They're going to introduce some vocabulary words. They're going to, you know, introduce the structure of the text. And then students are going to read it. And while they're reading, they're going to be successful because it is decodable. Once they finish reading it, though, they're going to have conversations where they can ask, you know, comprehension questions. Students can go back in the text, look for evidence. They can respond in writing. So all of those things that we would do with a normal grade level text, sure, to build comprehension, we're going to do with students, but with a decodable text. So that way they're getting the support with the phonics instruction as well. So again, I think that we have this idea that it's like if students need help with phonics, that's the only thing we can give them and they're going to be missing out on comprehension. But the reality of it is you can teach comprehension skills with any text. So sort of in a succinct way to answer that question, we need to address the phonics gap, but we don't have to forget about comprehension when we're going through and, you know, teaching the phonics skills and reading the decodable texts.
Is, I think, a great way to think about it. Again, it's not either or. It's both. And
yeah,
and
it needs to be both, especially, like I said, it's like if students have those phonics gaps, we have to fill those. We can't ignore them.
We can't ignore them. Absolutely. There, that's true. It's going to be it's a true case regardless of what grade level they're in. Right now, you mentioned fourth grade. And, you know, when we think about the students who are in fourth grade, those are what we call the so-called COVID kids. They were kindergartners in 2020. And so, again, we think about those kids as being, think about, again, some of them missed a lot of school. Some of them, unfortunately, you know, we had to wear masks. They were being taught virtually. So those kids may lack a lot of important foundational literacy skills. They've not yet acquired them. How do we support those so-called COVID kids? And again, we think about our third graders, also our fifth graders, you know, our second graders even. How do we support those kids to become proficient readers who are missing those foundational skills?
Yeah. And I mean, I think it starts with recognizing that they were given an unfair set of circumstances to start their elementary education at no fault to their own, at no fault to anybody's, you know, that COVID happened. But you mentioned so many things that significantly impact students' ability to acquire those foundational skills. You know, just thinking the impact of wearing a mask. You know, how much of our language do we observe by watching, you know, how teachers pronounce things, the placement of the tongue, right, in the mouth to make certain sounds. And when you have a mask, you're not able to access that, you know, teaching, you know, having to learn how to read over Zoom, you know, there's only so much you can do over a screen. And so I think recognizing that these students were given an unfortunate situation, and I think we need to extend a lot of empathy and grace and understanding to these students. And I think also being really relentless in helping them get caught up, right? Recognizing that, yeah, COVID happened and these students maybe do have some gaps, but we don't want to just sort of use that as an excuse for their performance and say, well, they're always going to be underperforming because of COVID. I think we need to say, okay, this was the circumstances and the situation. We need to be really intentional about making sure that we can fill those gaps, especially before they leave elementary and go on to middle school. So that way they do have a chance at, you know, operating and functioning at grade level. So I think really similar to a lot of the things that, you know, I talked about previously is, you know, recognizing where the gaps are. So I think, first of all, teachers, and a little bit of encouragement, I think, for teachers who are third, fourth, and fifth grade teachers. Most of the time, if you are an upper elementary teacher, you don't have a lot of experience with teaching phonics or phonemic awareness or teaching kids how to read. And you might not have the resources or the support. So recognizing that this is going to push you out of your comfort zone, but your students need this. And so embrace the discomfort of being like, okay, I have to figure out how to teach kids how to read. I can do that. But I think it starts with really recognizing what gaps do these students have. And it is going to be different for every student, for every class. But looking for doing something like a spelling inventory can help teachers identify if students are missing short vowel sounds, if they're missing long vowel sounds, if they're missing the blends. You know, we need to figure out what gaps do students have, and then we need to start filling those gaps. So do some sort of assessment to figure out where the gaps are, and we need to carve out time in our day to fill those gaps. And if it's an entire class is struggling, then guess what? You can use your whole group instruction to work on, you know, phonics, phonemic awareness. If it's just a small group of students, then you want to be meeting with those students every day if possible to, you know, help support them. And it really is a matter of giving them, you know, practice and exposure, you know, doing things like blending, segmenting, reading decodable words, phrases. We don't want to prevent them from encountering grade level content. So we still want to make sure that, you know, if your fourth grade class is reading texts on ecosystems, right, that they're still exposed to that and they can still participate orally in understanding those texts. But at the sort of the independent level, we want to make sure that these kids are getting really the intervention and the support that they need. So I think it comes down to identifying what the students need and then carving out the time to do that. And I think the challenging part for upper elementary is finding the resources that support students. You know I always felt uncomfortable giving a fourth grade student that struggled with reading a decodable text that looked like it was created for a kindergartner. You know, because the student already knows that they're struggling with reading. They know that it's a challenge for them. And then if you put materials in front of them that have that babyish feel to them, you know, they're going to be maybe a little bit reluctant or hesitant. So I think as educators and teachers, if you can locate and find materials that have a more advanced or mature look to it, and I know there's a lot of really great resources out there that are like, they're cool resources for upper elementary kids. I know there's a company, I follow them on Instagram and I think it's brilliant, but they're called Hooked on Comics, and they write decodable comic texts for students. So if you're a fourth grader, right, it's going to be so much more fun to read a decodable text that is a comic book as opposed to, you know, something about Stan and Jan went for, you know, they ran, whatever. It's like, that's
right.
I don't want to say that's boring, but I think as a teacher, really finding the materials that these students will be excited about reading, invested in reading. And then, like I said, we got to just make sure we have the time to provide the intervention for the students.
Sarah, that is a golden nugget there, because I want you to know that, like, it is tough to give students that work that really can be demeaning, right? Uh-huh. Almost insulting, right? For an older learner. And I'm so proud of our materials, for example, for third grade that we have for our Phonics Reading Me program.
Yeah.
I want to read them.
Yes.
They're so exciting and intriguing. And, you know, it's another way also, I have to say, you know, to make sure that you're getting your reading and your reading, your science and your social studies materials, because oftentimes we are focused so much on reading that we forget that we can read about these wonderful topics, yes, right? For reading and writing. I also love that you mentioned the oral language piece, because children can still access the content orally. And when we think about literacy, we mean all things literacy, listening, speaking, reading, uh-huh, and writing as well. So with that said, I'd love to kind of shift to writing. And I'd love for you to share what your go-to structure for a daily writing block, really in both primary and upper grades, looks like. And please, if you can, talk about how we can include science and social studies.
Well, I love that you mentioned that. And I always, so obviously we support literacy teachers, but I'm always telling our literacy teachers, and oftentimes in upper elementary, you know, teachers are departmentalized. And so they're, you know, teaching just reading or just science or social studies. But we're always encouraging our audience, invite your entire grade level to come to our workshops and our trainings. Because the reality of it is, no matter what subject you teach, you are a reading teacher and you are a writing teacher, because reading and writing happens in all subject areas. So if you teach science or social studies, guess what? You also are teaching reading and writing.
Amen. Say that for the people in the back.
Yeah. So when we think about a structure for teaching writing, and this is maybe an answer that teachers don't love, because teachers, right, they want to be told, okay, you have got 20 minutes to teach writing. You're going to spend 5 minutes doing this. You're going to spend 10 minutes doing this, right? They want a very specific structure. But really what we want to do is not think about how are we using our time. It's more so, what sort of writing components are we introducing to our students? And really, ultimately, we want to do that through the lens of what they are reading. Writing instruction has really found to be the most effective when students have something to write about, and yes, that what they're writing about can easily come from what they are reading. And so we want to sort of think of not having this isolated writing block, but being really intentional about integrating writing into our reading instruction. And so the two really go hand in hand. So what that looks like is making sure then that students are developing the foundational writing skills in elementary that will eventually get them to be able to write a 5-paragraph essay when they are in middle school. I don't think students at the elementary level need to be writing essays. I know our testing comes think differently, but really elementary is helping students develop those foundational skills. And one of the really big things that we want to be doing in elementary is making sure our students have the ability to write sentences. And that is something that often gets forgotten. I used to be a 4th grade teacher and I never explicitly taught sentence level instruction. And guess what? I had students that struggled to write a 5-paragraph essay because they couldn't write a complete sentence. Yes. But instead of giving them support at the sentence level, we just kept on having them practice essay writing because that is what the end of the year test expected. And so really we want teachers to make sure that whether they're teaching writing as an isolated block or it's incorporated into their, you know, their reading instruction, that they are spending an ample amount of time on sentence level practice. And so we want to, you know, teachers are always like, okay, well, what does that look like? How do I teach sentences? And so it really is making sure students have exposure and understanding to write correct and complete sentences. So understanding that a sentence is going to have a subject, right? A who or a what, and a predicate. You know, it's the action. It's the do of the sentence. I think Anita Archer once said you have to have a who and you have to have a do in your sentence, right?
Yes.
So making sure students understand that. But some things that you can do to really help students develop that is, for example, there's an activity called find and fix a fragment. So let's just say you read a passage, and I'm going to use ecosystems again as an example. You just read a passage about ecosystems to your students. So after they've read that, you can write 3 sentences on the board that have to do with ecosystems, right? And one of those sentences is actually going to be a fragment. So your students are going to read the 3 sentences, and they're going to then identify which one is the fragment, and then they have to fix it. So they've, you know, identified, you know, whatever the fragment is, and maybe they recognize that it's missing a subject or it's missing a predicate, and then they have to complete it. And that's going to help students because how many of our students write in fragments? A lot of them do, right?
Yes.
But when they're identifying somebody else's fragment and fixing it, it's going to make it easier for them to write their own sentences correctly. So doing activities like that. Other things that you can do at the sentence level work is you can have students expand a sentence. This could be, again, something that you could easily do after students have read a text. So let's say they've read a fictional story, and you could give them, you know, they call it a kernel sentence, which is just a small, you know, the very basic. So, you know, your story could be about a girl named Chloe and she ran, right? Ran to school, whatever. So you're going to give students that small little bit that came from the story, and students have to add in the when did she run? Where did she run? How did she run? So they're going, yes, to slowly be expanding the sentence, but that activity teaches them how to write sentences that have a lot of details in it, right? So we want to really think through, you know, not just sort of like doing our writing block and spending a certain amount of time. It's more so what are we having our students do during their writing instruction that leads to building those foundational skills. So we want to make sure that we're spending plenty of time with sentence level practice in the both in primary and in upper elementary. And I think something that often gets overlooked at the primary grades is we want to rush students into doing this independently. Well, in the lower grades, we want to make sure we're providing enough support. So making sure that we're doing a lot of the sentence level practice orally as a class, because if students can, you know, give us a complete sentence orally, it's going to be much easier for them to do that in writing later down the road. So doing a lot of oral practice around sentence work, doing a lot of guided practice, a lot of modeling. So not as much independent practice at the lower grades, but a lot of, you know, collaborative work around sentences. So when they do get into the 3rd, 4th, and 5th grade, they can write complete sentences with details that use, you know, a variety of sentence structures. So sentence level work, I think, is a huge portion of writing in elementary at all grades. And 2 other things that I'll say that I think teachers tend to forget about is helping students develop a plan for their writing. So teaching students to outline. Right. And we think of this oftentimes through the lens of, again, this 5-paragraph essay, right? Our students are going to work on an essay, so we have to create an outline. Well, guess what? Your students can create an outline for their reading response. So, you know, so if you are having them summarize, they can create an outline before they summarize. If they are answering a question in science, you know, that requires them to use text evidence, they can create an outline before they write that response. If they're answering a math question that requires justification, they can create their outline. So we want to make sure that across all subject areas, students are getting practice to plan their writing.
Yes.
And then we want them to do their writing. But then the other thing that we forget to do is we want to give students plenty of opportunity to revise their writing and improve it, because that's really where a lot of this magic happens with writing.
Yes.
And so all of those same examples, right? If a student writes a summary, have them go back and revise it, improve their verbs to make them more active, you know, add in more details, their science response, you know, have them go back and vary their sentence structure. You know, maybe they're going to ask a question at the beginning as part of their hooks, you know, realizing that all of these things we teach our students, we want to make sure that we're then giving them practice throughout the instructional day. Sure. So I think it's less about having this like structure for our writing block and more being aware of how can we weave in key writing skills to all aspects. But yeah, sentence level writing is something that needs to be a big priority. Planning writing and revising writing, I think, are sort of three areas that if teachers put a lot of emphasis on those, they would see big gains in their students' writing output.
And I love that you mentioned, again, this oral language piece. I'm actually doing a workshop for the Head Start conference.
Oh, cool.
In Columbus. Yeah. And oral language is so key, especially for not just for our little ones, but also for not just for our little ones, but also for our older ones. We want to hear that language, and we want to hear those sentences, those complete sentences. And that's something we should require, right? That becomes a habit. And you then can see that habit on paper as well.
Well, I even think too, it's just like we want our classrooms to be noisy. We want students to be talking with each other, you know, with us. And I think that oral language and having students respond in complete sentences to any question you ask is another easy way to improve their writing skills. If they can respond in a complete sentence, they can write in a complete sentence.
One other thing that I have to highlight that you said that I think is key is that peer like interaction where you are actually having kids correct or find ways that they can improve their sentences, whether it's expanding them or finding those fragments. That peer work, there's some studies that have been done that show how much it solidifies their own skills by helping someone else. So that is, I love that. That is so fantastic. So now I want to ask you, so when we think about teaching today, I know when I began teaching many moons ago, I had a lot on my plate. I find that teachers have even a lot more in today's classroom. So it's a busy classroom. There's a lot of, there's a heavy lift for them in many, many ways. How can you, what can you do to share, what can you say to our teachers to really help them manage literacy instruction in today's busy classroom?
Yeah, and I think like a really easy thing that, not an easy thing because teaching is not easy, but something that teachers can do to sort of help eliminate some of that decision fatigue, right? And take some things off their plate. And this is something that we love talking about with teachers. I talk about it a lot on our podcast and in our workshops, but creating routines, right? These repeatable steps that if you bring in literacy routines or systems, you don't have to think about it. And you know that your classroom can run on autopilot. And if you're strategic about the routines that you put in place, then you can also be confident that you're addressing a lot of these sort of key literacy practices that we know lead to skilled readers and writers. So just kind of some examples, like we just talked about how important sentence level writing is. You could easily have a sentence writing routine that you bring into your classroom. And it doesn't even need to necessarily be a part of your reading block or your writing block. You could have it be part of your morning meeting, right? So it's like maybe on Mondays, your morning message has a fragment that students need to find and fix. Maybe on Tuesday, your morning message has two simple sentences that students need to combine. On Wednesday, your morning message is all scrambled up and students need to unscramble it to get the correct sentence, right? So doing something small like that takes the decision work off your plate. So you're not having to think, okay, how are we practicing sentence writing today?
Yes.
But you're being intentional about bringing in sentence level activities that we know improve students' sentence writing skills. Another example, and we talk about this a lot in one of our workshops, and we call it the 3-2-1 for reading. And so it's before teachers begin a read aloud or a shared reading, and whether they are doing a novel, a picture book or a chapter book or an article from their science text, a graphic novel, whatever it is, there are three things that teachers can do before they start reading, and that is activate background knowledge, introduce vocabulary, and preview text structure. Mm-hmm. And we should recognize those as all being part of Scarborough's reading rope as something that leads to skilled reading. While they're reading, they're going to do two things. They're going to pull out a sentence and identify the syntax or sentence structure, which is also part of Scarborough's reading rope. And they're going to ask questions that lead to verbal reasoning, so this inferential thinking. And then after they're done reading, they're going to assign one writing about reading response. So their students are going to get some writing brought in there. That's an easy thing for teachers to do. They don't have to think about it, right? It's like, okay, this is what I do during and after. Yeah. But if they're doing all of those things every time they're reading, we know those are the aspects of language comprehension that lead to skilled reading. So it's going to lead to more effective readers, but it doesn't require a lot of planning or brain power from teachers. Yeah. So I think if teachers can, you know, get creative with how they're bringing in routines to their instruction, they can feel a lot more confident in how they're teaching and then not have to think, okay, how am I going to activate background knowledge, or how am I teaching vocabulary, or, you know, all of those things, because it's right. Like just woven into what they're doing. So thinking about routines can take, like I said, it can eliminate decision fatigue and just make it easier for teachers to make sure they're hitting those really important instructional components.
Fantastic way to really save the teacher's brain and time. Yeah. For sure. Awesome. So I'd love to finalize our conversation by asking you to share with our listeners one empowering message. I want you to think about this when it comes to literacy, all things literacy, for teachers, for school leaders, and families. What's one empowering message you would leave with them?
Yeah. So this actually comes from Melissa and Lori Love Literacy. I heard them say this on their podcast, and I love it. And so I love sharing this idea with teachers whenever I can. But it's this idea that you should go as slow as you need to, but as fast as you can. And I think that teaching, to your point, right, we talked about how it can be so overwhelming. And at the same time, there are students that need intervention, right? They need help with phonics, and maybe I don't feel equipped to teach that. I've got students that struggle with sentence writing, and I don't know how to support them and build up their, you know, foundational skills in writing. So teachers, administrators, parents can feel very overwhelmed by the literacy needs that are presented to us today.
Sure.
We can't ignore them, right? And so we need to go as slow as we need to in order to feel like we're making progress and have the knowledge and the capacity to, you know, make these shifts and changes. But we also need to go as fast as we can. You know, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. And so I think so often teachers feel bad about all of the things they're not doing.
Sure.
I think we need to feel better about all of the things that we are doing and reminding ourselves that we are human and we are not robots and we can't, you know, work all hours of the day. So just remind yourself, make forward progress, go as slow as you need to move forward,
sure.
But also go as fast as you can, because we have students that are depending on us to help, you know, set them up to be literate adults. So yeah, go as slow as you need to, as fast as you can. That's like my favorite sort of reminder and encouragement to share with teachers.
That is such great advice. Oh, it reminds me of some advice that Dr. Carol Ann Tomlinson shared with me many years ago when I called her just to ask her a question about what I should do for a workshop. And she said to me, Cheryl, you know, teachers feel so overwhelmed that they need to build their toolbox so quickly. But The reality is, focus on that one thing that you can learn, really master that, really get that skill, put that in your toolbox, and then do the next thing.
Next one.
And if you think about that in terms of just years for teachers, by the fifth year, you've got five really, really strong skills that you know you have down pat that you can use with any student. So yeah. I love that reminder.
Because it's like we can't learn everything all at once. We can't be experts at everything at once. Pick that one area, master it, and move on to the next.
I love Miss Melissa and Lori Love Literacy. It's a great podcast as well.
Oh, they're great. Yeah.
So it was so great talking with you. I think you're doing some amazing things. So how can people reach you? How can they find you and your work?
Yeah. So if you love listening to podcasts, I'm assuming you do, obviously, since you've tuned in to Dr. Cheryl's show, we have a weekly podcast that comes out, the Stellar Teacher Podcast. I share a lot of just strategies, encouragement for teachers who are, you know, in the trenches teaching literacy day to day. So that's a really great place to connect with us. Also on Instagram, we are at the Stellar Teacher Company. We love hearing from teachers. I'm always telling teachers, send us a DM. We will answer it, usually in an audio message, because that's the easiest way for us to communicate with teachers. But yeah, either the podcast or on Instagram. Our website also, stellarteacher.com, has links to everything. But we truly do love encouraging teachers and connecting with them. So hopefully I can connect with some of your guests a little bit later after the show.
We would love that, Sarah. Thank you so much for all that you do.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Cheryl.
Enjoyed it. Thank you for listening to Literacy Matters Empowered Conversations. If you like this show and want more, visit our site at lwtiers.com/literacymatters, where you can watch video versions of each and every episode. Don't forget to tap the follow button so you don't miss an episode. Also, please help spread the word and leave a review on iTunes, Spotify, or your platform of choice. Your support is what keeps this literacy journey going.